You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Recently, the University of Auckland, Massey University and the Victoria University of Wellington have announced they will not be using software to check over students' work for AI plagiarism. This has left concerns over what the future of checking for AI will mean in these universities and whether other universities and tertiary institutions as a whole will follow suit. On Friday, I spoke to the National President of the Tertiary Education Union, or TEU, Julie Douglas, about this announcement and the union's thoughts on it. Why are we seeing these universities moving away from using software to check for AI in students' work?
Look, I think this is a dynamic problem which is moving at such pace that many institutions are just at a loss to know how to deal with it. We know with AI, the whole point of it is that it learns. And so every time I think things get in place to try and monitor or identify any breaches, it learns how to get around that and won't do it the next time. So I think we are under attack by these new tools that we have in our world, which are challenging a lot of areas of integrity in education. And I'm curious to see that the university take those positions. I know that Massey, for instance, has decided to go back into in-person exams at the end of semesters, which is really the only way that you can assure that students' work is their own. Yes, so I just think it's a reality of this crazy world we live in.
How prolific is the usage of AI in our universities, especially since we've seen such a rise in it in recent years?
Look, I can't quantify that. I know anecdotally, and even in my own experience at AUT, there is evidence that students students forever have always looked for ways to get around things of doing the work. This is just a new tool they're using. So I think I don't know exactly how widespread it is, but I think it's significant when the ability of the use of these new tools is going to undermine the credibility of education, and it certainly is undermining the critical thinking skills of students. And we do not want to be having graduates out in the workplace who have not developed those critical thinking skills. So for me, that's what really worries me about this. You know, just usual old plagiarism of cut and pasting out of somebody's article does not have the potential to the same extent to change students' approaches to critical thinking.
Now, the University of Auckland, Massey University and the Victoria University of Wellington are just three of the universities we have in the country. What are we seeing from the other universities here in regards to how they're approaching how students are using AI in their work? Are these universities using AI detection tools still?
Look, I think there's a range, and I think one of the approaches that a number of universities are using is trying to use an educative approach, so getting students to understand how to use the tool, allowing them to use it within certain constraints, having to be explicit in statements that they have used it. But to be honest, while I think it's good to be teaching students the critical ways to use these tools, I'm not sure that we are allowing or educating our teachers in these universities the time and resources to understand the use of AI by students and educating them on how to identify incorrect use of it. And lecturers already are overwhelmed with the burdens of the job, and this further requirement to be the police is quite frustrating and detracts from the point of the university.
That touches on a little bit of my next point, but are you aware if lecturers and academic staff were involved in these decisions at the University of Auckland and these universities at all?
Look, I'm not aware. Look, we're still working on developing our position as a union around the use of AI, but one of the things that we do feel quite strongly about is that just in the same way that health and safety committees get set up and there's an absolute right for worker representation on those committees, we think that there should be similar committees set up within universities which have the stakeholders involved on that to be part of this, because as I said, this is moving so quickly. It is so dynamic. We need the stakeholders involved because everybody's interests are at the heart of this, and we need to be collectively working out what is in the best interests of our graduates. So I think that often the universities are moving quite quickly, but not maybe going through a process which involves all stakeholders, and that worries me.
And is the union concerned that with these universities announcing that they will be moving away from using software to check over students' work for AI, that this might incentivise students to maybe even students who haven't used AI in coursework previously, to now start using AI?
Oh, God, I hope not. Look, I hope most students, I mean, I know there are so many pressures on students' time now, but I would really hope that most students would appreciate that if they are spending so much money and time to get this qualification, that they embrace the process of learning and indulge in that process and go about their work and their assignments trying to learn and understand and find out rather than pushing a button. But, you know, we will never stop students, the few students who do take that choice. But I think we just have to trust that in the long term, they won't be getting the top jobs. They won't be having those positions because they won't have developed those skills which will get them into good work.
And this next question's a little bit broad, but with what barriers, and you have briefly touched on this as well, but what barriers are in place to make sure students aren't plagiarising their work with AI? You mentioned MASI going back to in-person exams at the end of the semester. What are we seeing at other universities?
I think, you know, a greater requirement for disclosure. And I know that, well, it feels to me that, you know, if you go into any university, there isn't a standard approach across every faculty and every department. So I think it also depends a little bit on the content and what you're dealing with, because some subjects won't lend themselves very well to, well, at this point, maybe the use of AI as widespread as in other places. So I think that wherever there's a deeply rich content, you will have less of a problem. But I think that, you know, lecturers are finding different ways that they may use in-class presentations, or they may require students to have one-on-ones with lecturers to really get to understand whether there has been a development of understanding of content and concepts. But I don't think we have, and it will never be one size fits all. There is never that approach. So I think we don't know the extent of the different ways people are approaching it, which is why we are at that point, I think, in New Zealand, where we need to start bringing people together to understand what the implications of AI is in tertiary education particularly. The union has got a seminar day on the 7th of November, the 31st of October, looking specifically at AI in tertiary education for our members, and I'm hoping for us to actually come out with a position around what we see going forward we need to be doing and how we need to be involved in that. So I think, you know, this is timely, and it may be past the most timely point that we should be looking at this, but we need to get the information so we actually know what we're dealing with.
And what does this move signal heading forward with these universities not using AI software or software to check over AI in students' work?
Look, I don't know, to be honest. It could be the path of least resistance. And as I say, you know, we'll always have a percentage of students who take one way of dealing with their studies and others would never go down that path. And maybe this is just the next event in history that we're encountering in education, and it kind of sorts itself out. But look, I just do feel quite deeply concerned about the ability for this tool to reduce the need for critical thinking, because if students put in work without looking at it themselves and thinking about whether or not it's right, it's true, or it's even answered what was asked of them, without casting that overview over it, you know, what is the point? What is the point of education? Some days I do despair. I mean, students pay their money. Do we just give them a certificate? I don't know. I think we're at a bit of a turning point in how we address these issues. And I just truly believe that if all the parties don't come together to discuss it, we're not going to come out with an approach which is going to meet our needs as a society.
Following on from my chat with Douglas, I spoke to Sharpa Richter, a senior marketing lecturer at the University of Auckland, about using interactive oral assessments, or IOAs, as a way to combat AI in testing students. She has been testing IOAs over the past couple of years in a piece on The Conversation, which she co-authored with the University of Auckland's Patrick Dodd. She says this method of testing is one of the most effective and authentic ways to see what students really know in the age of AI. I spoke to her about this method of testing and what it entails. To start, how do these IOAs operate?
So they operate in two main ways. Either we get students to come in into a small meeting room, and there's myself and a moderator, or an examiner and a moderator, and we do them like that. So there's one student to two of us, or we get them to come in groups. but we still ask questions individually, and it doesn't take long. So individual ones are usually around 7 minutes, and if we do them in a group setting, then it's 5 minutes per student.
How would a group setting operate, and why, I guess, do it in a group setting as opposed to just one-on-one with a lecturer?
Yeah, so the group setting came about when we wanted to scale. So initially we had trialed the IOAs with rather a small class, and so we had time and resourcing to do one-on-one. But when we wanted to put it into a class with 200 students, we needed to figure out a way of where we could still, you know, get the individual IOA, but doing it faster in a group setting. So in a group setting, essentially they sit around in a table, and they can bring in notes in terms of their assignment that they're talking about, but no computers, no devices. And it's just a conversation, and they do not have the option of saying, oh, that wasn't my part, which is something that we're trying to override as well, where, you know, we don't want that kind of answer. Everyone's taken part in the group assignment. Everyone's responsible for the project. You should be able to answer a question about any part of the project.
How are lecturers guaranteeing that they are receiving authentic responses from students instead of the students just memorizing responses to certain questions?
Yeah, so we had that in the first time that we ran it. We gave students the questions that we would ask, like written down, these are the questions. And what we found was that students were doing exactly that. They would memorize the answer to this question and to this question. And when they came in and we asked them that question, they gave us a very rote learned answer. And what we've done now is we've moved away from that to more of a Socratic approach, where we ask a very basic question, just what is this concept? And they could have, you know, ChatGPT'd it, but then we delve into it further and we say, okay, and what is your understanding of it in terms of your project or in terms of this case study? And when you have that kind of conversational tone, it becomes very apparent very quickly who knows their project and knows their work and who's just memorized or rote learnt an answer.
How do lecturers prepare for these sort of assessments? Is there much training needed to prepare lecturers to go into IOAs?
Right. So I think the biggest preparation is having a deep discipline knowledge, which most lecturers do, and drawing on that. And so what we do in terms of training is we have new lecturers or new TAs sit in on some IOAs to watch how we ask questions, how we ask follow-up questions, how we bring students back, you know, within the 3 or 5 or 7 minute time boundary that we have. So that's sort of our main training, and just going through, you know, examples of, okay, if you get a one-word answer, what's another way to ask a question to draw out more information?
And why oral assessments specifically? Why not go back to the stock standard written assessments like I did back in high school?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I talk about IOAs, I feel that people get caught up in this, oh, so IOAs are going to replace everything. And they're not, right? So these IOAs are not meant to be the only way that we're assessing students. Typically, they make up 30 to 35% of your total grade. The other parts of your grade can be a mixture of other things, video presentations, in-person presentations, written assessments. So it's not meant to be a standalone, this is the only thing that we're doing. It's meant to be complementary to other forms of assessment.
And are you aware if other countries in the other universities in the country are trialing IOAs as well?
Yes, so I am fairly certain that AUT is doing IOAs, and there's probably other universities doing it. I know for sure in Australia they're doing IOAs, and they have been for as long as we have, or even longer. And some of those are scaling up to huge numbers. So some of them are doing IOAs for 400, 500 student classes.
And you've briefly kind of touched on this point. How would this work for students who have disabilities such as a speech impediment or who are deaf? Would there be different testing involved here to make it a bit more of an equitable experience?
That is an excellent question. We have not come across that yet. And when that does happen, I guess we would have conversation as to how we could support those students. What we have had to deal with is English second language students, where they struggle to communicate in English. And what we have found for those students, well, one thing is that, you know, we are by studying at the University of Auckland, it's an English medium university. So at the end of it, you should be able to communicate in English. So it's testing that ability. But then the other thing is that, you know, we're not trying to trip up these students. We scaffold them throughout the semester. Every tutorial or every other tutorial, we give them an opportunity to practice. You know, how would you respond to a question about this part of your assignment? Let's have a one-on-one practice. So we do try and scaffold throughout the semester, so it's not a surprise.
And these trials have been for university students, specifically postgrad, I think, is the trial you've done so far?
So we've trialed them in undergraduate classes as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. Would this operate differently if you were to trial this with, like, secondary school students?
I don't think so. I think secondary school students should also have this ability to express themselves and to stand up for what they've learnt and, you know, to be able to express, you know, their learnings and what they can contribute to the project. Yeah.
And looking forward, and you've also briefly touched on this as well, would you want IOAs to be the standard for testing students' knowledge in universities and just in their schooling in general?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is a really, really important part of anyone's learning. And when we work backwards from industry, it's something that you are expected to do almost on a weekly or daily basis, where you have a stand up with your team and you need to, you know, you often don't have that much time and you need to be able to give an elevator pitch of, you know, what work you've been doing and why it's important and how you're contributing. And then you've got to present to your team and then to the wider team and to see, you know, to C-suite. And you've really got to be able to be given the opportunity to practice the skill. I think the most important thing that I would like people to remember with IOAs is that it is a vital skill for students to possess. It is something that we need to practice. It is a good way to navigate this world that we find ourselves in, this AI, you know, how can we create AI friendly or resistant assessments? And it's not the only answer. It's just one of them.
That was the Tertiary Education Union's, or TEU's, Julie Douglas and the University of Auckland's Sharpa Richter on multiple universities moving away from using software to check for AI plagiarism and using interactive oral assessments, or IOAs, as a way to authentically test students.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.